You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Here's the thing about social distancing, what we were all asked to do back in March, or start doing back in March. Here's the thing about telling people to stay home and close down their businesses and stop seeing friends and family. It was supposed to be temporary. It wasn't supposed to be something we would be doing until a vaccine came along in a year or two or three or four. It was something we were asked to do. It was something we needed to do, something many of us were required to do, something all of us should have been required to do, while public health systems were created that would allow us to leave the house again and go back to work and see friends and maybe even get laid. And it was a very difficult thing that we were asked to do. And while we did our part, while we sheltered at home, while we canceled weddings, while we let loved ones die alone and then zoomed in for their funerals, the government was supposed to be doing its part. It was supposed to make tests widely available and create a system of contact tracing and require people who had COVID-19 or had been exposed to people who had COVID-19 to stay home, to quarantine themselves. The government was supposed to create protocols that would protect the most vulnerable while allowing the rest of us to return to some semblance of normal life. Or the rest of you, I should say, as I count myself among the vulnerable. And that wasn't an irrational expectation. It's literally what governments did in Europe and China and South Korea and Canada and Rwanda. And it worked. You've doubtless seen the graphs that are zooming around online, graphs that show our cases of COVID-19 rising at pretty much the same pace as other countries. Then everyone takes a dip when lockdowns are instituted all over the world, us included. But our trend lines quickly begin to rise while the trend lines in other countries all over the world fall. Those were the countries that made tests widely available and required the sick or the exposed to quarantine themselves. And those countries, Canada, Rwanda, Germany, they are opening back up. We didn't do any of that, and we are paying the price. No, wait, you know what? Our government, our incompetent federal government, didn't do any of that, and we are paying the price. They didn't hold up their end of the bargain, which is why we are 4% of the world's population and now 25% of the world's coronavirus infections. And people are in despair that anything is going to change. And they know that they can't keep doing what they've been doing and don't see the point in continuing to do what they've been asked to do if the government isn't going to do what it's supposed to do. Why hold up your end of the bargain when the government isn't holding up its end of that bargain? So I can't say the scenes out of Fire Island this weekend. Large crowds of shirtless gay men partying, no masks, no social distancing, while our already off the charts infection rates continue to rise in 42 out of 50 states, gay men partying in New York, where 32,000 people have died. I can't say those images shocked me. They depressed me. They made me despair about how stupid people can be, but they didn't shock me. And on some level, I get it. We want to open everything back up, including our legs. And people figure, I think subconsciously or consciously, that if the government isn't going to do its part, if the government isn't going to hold up its end of the bargain, why should we bother holding up our end or refrain from sticking our ends up? If the president is going to have rallies in churches and in infection hotspots without social distancing or masks, some people are going to tell themselves there's no reason why they shouldn't go to a crowded pool party where, as they would learn after the fact, someone who knew he had COVID-19 showed up to party too. Gay or straight, or bi or pan or asexual, or aromantic or a-hole, you shouldn't be going to big parties because you shouldn't want to make it worse. We shouldn't be going to parties, gay or straight, at all, really, right now. And while the selfish gay men were getting all the attention and all the focus of most of the internet outrage over the weekend, there were plenty of other examples online of straight people behaving just as recklessly and selfishly all over the country. And Jesus fucking Christ, people, even if the government isn't making it better, we shouldn't be making it worse. You shouldn't go to a party like that because you're better than the president, or you should be better than he is. And how hard is that really, to be better than Trump? Has a bar ever been set lower? And to the selfish motherfuckers out there, even if you don't give a shit about other people, even if you're truly a Republican at heart, you shouldn't want to make it worse for yourself. If you go to that party or the bar or the restaurant or the orgy or the church service and get sick and pass the infection on to your friends and family members and neighbors, you aren't punishing the president or getting back at shitty red state governors or striking a blow for freedom. You're only ensuring that this shit that you hate, as we all hate, will continue and will get worse for you along with everyone else. So, the rage you feel about the way we've been lied to and betrayed and failed by our government, don't dance it off. Direct it at the government. Demand that they hold up their end of the bargain while keeping your end at home as much as possible. All right, coming up on today's show, tons of your Qs, lots of my As, and Dr. Aaron Berry from Planned Parenthood joins us to tackle your sex and health-related questions. She's on the micro. There's also a ton of Dr. Berry on the Magnum. The Magnum, of course, is the subscription version of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. Twice as much show, more guests, and no ads on the Magnum, but lots of Dr. Berry on the micro too. All that coming up on today's show. This episode of Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Talkspace, online therapy that makes it easy to get extra mental health support. For $100 off your first month, go to Talkspace.com and use the offer code SAVAGE.
This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Support for today's show, support we are very grateful for, comes from Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the amazing services of the post office right from your desk in your own home, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you are done. It could not be easier. And right now, use Savage for this special offer. Includes up to $55 worth of free postage, a digital scale, and a four-week trial. Do not wait. Go to stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in SAVAGE. That's stamps.com. Enter S-A-V-A-G-E.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling about a question about my boyfriend. He is uncircumcised, and sometimes when we have sex, it seems like the foreskin on his dick pulls back a little bit too far. And then it hurts, like it gets stuck there. And the next day, I'll, try to instigate again. And he's like, oh, no, it hurts. And it's because his foreskin is still pulled back. And I don't know if you have any advice for that.
What your boyfriend has is called phimosis. It's a narrow or small opening at the end of the foreskin. Basically, the circumference of his penis is wider than the circumference of the hole at the tip, at the end of his foreskin. Sometimes phimosis is so bad that a foreskin can't be unrolled over the head of the penis, past the head of the penis. That's not your boyfriend's problem. He can get his foreskin all the way down past his penis, but then it gets stuck there because it's narrower than, the circumference of the shaft of his penis, and it traps. It gets stuck. And that's painful and uncomfortable. It's also a little dangerous if it's cutting off his circulation or making it more difficult for blood to get to the rest of his penis that's in front of the opening on his foreskin when it's rolled back over the shaft. And luckily for your boyfriend, this is easily treated. And if he had a worse case of phimosis, he may have already sought out treatment. There are ways to gently stretch the foreskin to make the opening wider. There are creams that can be applied that help with that, steroids. And there are surgical interventions if that becomes necessary. And sometimes those surgical interventions are necessary when a case of phimosis is much worse than what you describe your boyfriend suffering. But he should go talk to a urologist. This is a problem that is easily addressed, easily remedied, but it's one that a lot of people don't feel comfortable bringing up with their doctors because it means talking about your penis and talking about what happens when your penis gets hard. And this discomfort and pain, and people sometimes have a hard time talking about that. Some doctors have a hard time responding, as they should, when a patient raises a medical issue that's about sexual functioning. So if his primary care physician refused to listen when he tried to bring this up, yeah, he needs a new doctor. And if he hasn't brought it up, he needs to bring it up, and he needs to then get a referral to a urologist who can help him with this.
Hi, Dan. Like many people, have been dealing with my wife's lowered libido during the quarantine. And so I started thinking about hiring a sex worker, which is not something that I've ever done, ever thought about. And I'm also a non-binary person who is assigned female at birth. So it's not something that you see, I've heard of my friends doing, or something you see a lot of. So I'm, you know, pretty new to how it all works. I saw a post in a social app for people like me about someone who was interested in becoming a sex worker and was reaching out to other sex workers for advice. I think I should mention that I'm also only interested in really butch women. I like really masculine women, and that's not something that you see very often. And so when this poster mentioned that she was butch, I was like, bam, gonna reach out. So I reached out, set up a time to get coffee, and she shared her Instagram profile with me, which was not, you know, it's not a sex workery kind of profile. It's just like vacation pictures. And she said she's totally new to the business. I think I would probably be her first client. And we chatted a little bit, totally nice. And then I got nosy and I saw that she was following my friend on Instagram. And so I reached out to my friend who had been on a date with this person, had gotten her number, and I got even more nosy and looked up her phone number. So what I found out is that she works at a job that makes easily twice as much as what I do in a year. She owns a house, and I feel a little weird about this. I feel weird that she wanted to charge what, from some research on Trist of sex workers in my area, is, you know, maybe a little bit on the higher end of average. I feel weird that part of why I would like to hire a sex worker is to get that like professional experience. Like, you know what you're doing, you come in, you do it to me, and then you leave. And to know that, A, this person doesn't have any experience but is charging me on the higher end of average when she makes twice as much as what I do, and works in an industry, you know, works in tech, and I'm a healthcare worker who has been dealing with a lot during the pandemic, and that's part of why I wanted to hire a sex worker. Seems weird. Am I overthinking this?
You know what I feel weird about? I feel weird about all the ways in which you've invaded this woman's privacy. I feel weird about how you've essentially stalked her, talked to friends who know her, who dated her, looked through her Instagram, which she shared with you probably out of naivete, probably because she's not that experienced and she doesn't know that some people who hire sex workers feel entitled to dictate to the sex workers they hire how much they can charge, who they can know, what their other jobs are, whether they can own a house or not. You seem to resent the fact that this woman isn't engaging in survival prostitution, that she's not charging $5 for blowjobs under the expressway. Now, I'm not knocking the $5 blowjob from somebody who's engaged in survival prostitution. There are a lot of people out there who've engaged in survival prostitution to survive. But there are also people out there who do sex work for other reasons, and sometimes not out of economic necessity. And isn't that something that a lot of people claim, at least, to be a little more comfortable with? Aren't there a lot of people out there who are against prostitution, against decriminalizing sex work, because they worry that a lot of people who are doing it out of economic necessity, doing it out of a kind of economic duress? And yet you cite this woman and the fact that she doesn't need to do this because she's got a really good job that pays more than yours does and owns her house. How do you know that she owns her house? Why do you know that she owns her house? Because she owns her house and has a good job, how dare she charge so much? Sex workers get to set their own rates. If you are not comfortable paying the stated rate of the sex worker that you are in, considering hiring, whatever their experience level, move the fuck on to somebody who's charging a rate that you think is reasonable. And it just strikes me as really odd that you didn't think this rate was unreasonable until you invaded this woman's privacy. Now, she laid out a welcome mat by sending you her actual Instagram account. Perhaps that's a novice mistake that she won't make again if she's a listener to the show and she hears this call. But you weren't entitled to all of this information. You weren't. And, you know, you say that you wanted that experience of hiring a pro who knows what she's doing. If she's new to sex work, well, then she's not the person that you want to hire. She's not the pro who can bring to the table or the bed or the sling or the dungeon or whatever it is that you want from her, that experience level that you were looking for and that kind of, you know, getting with a seasoned pro thing that turns you on when you think about hiring a sex worker. So she's not the right sex worker for you. But you do not have a right to contact people that this woman knows in common, to out her if you did, and I hope you didn't, as someone who's thinking about doing sex work, to check in on where she lives, whether she owns her house or not, where she works. You weren't entitled to any of that information, and it is creepy that you went looking for it. And if you were a dude digging into a female sex worker's past employment history, their, you know, what they owned, you would see how discomforting this is, this invasion of privacy. So back the fuck off. You don't get to make an argument with a sex worker about your relative incomes when it comes to paying their rate or not. And some people would regard the fact that she's never done sex work before as something they were willing to pay a premium for. That's not something you want to pay a premium for. You want to pay to be with somebody who's more experienced sexually and more experienced in sex work than this woman is. Well, go find that woman. All that said, you know, if you're broke, you can say to someone, I can afford this, and then they can block you or shut you down. You can obviously say that. I don't think it's respectful to haggle with sex workers. If her rates are too high, she'll get no clients. She'll realize it. She'll lower her rates. Most sex workers I know block hagglers without a second thought. But you're free to say, look, I'm a little broke right now and blah, blah, blah. And maybe I could afford this. That seems a little steep. You can say that. And then she can block you or agree to your lowballed offer. But you're not allowed to cite the fact that she works in tech or that she owns a house and that you know that. It's inappropriate that you went and dug all that information up about her. So that what? So that you could throw it out in an argument? You can throw it in her face in an argument with her about her rates? Sorry, you made me mad. But you did. You made me mad. Jesus, person, this is not something that you should ever do to a sex worker. And the last thing I'm sort of struggling with here is that you say that you work in healthcare, a nurse or a doctor, someone presumably on the front lines, which means your risk of exposure to COVID is higher than the average tech worker who owns a house who's dabbling in sex work. And so you are a greater risk to her than she is to you. The only risk she presents to you is perhaps financial, because she wants more money than you're comfortable spending, but you pose a risk to her health. And presumably you're not going to quarantine for 2 weeks before you hire a sex worker. If you're in a high-risk occupation, I would encourage you not to see a sex worker right now, unless you're following very strictly New York City Health's recommendations about how to minimize the risks of a sexual encounter. Do it outside, wear a mask, don't kiss. There are ways to minimize your risks, but yeah, I'm not necessarily comfortable telling somebody who works in healthcare right now to go see a sex worker, particularly an inexperienced one who doesn't know better than to share her actual Instagram account with an anonymous, basically stranger who's interested in hiring them. And again, you know, the only thing you're entitled to when you hire a sex worker is their time. You're entitled to their backstory. You don't get to know where else they work. You don't get to know what they own. You're not allowed to weaponize that information if you should stumble over it during a haggling session that you are also not entitled to. The future is unknown and often unknowable, plain and simple. If you've been struggling with the so-called new normal, worrying about the future, it's not just you. But stress and anxiety don't have to rule your life. And if anything helps reduce stress and reduce anxiety, it's talking it out. Talkspace has thousands of licensed therapists trained in over 40 specialties, including anxiety, depression, relationship issues, and more. If you have something specific you want to work on right now, and really who doesn't, Talkspace will find someone right for you. It's affordable. 1 month on Talkspace costs about the same amount as a single in-person therapy session. But with Talkspace, you can send unlimited messages to your therapist and they'll engage with you at least 5 days a week. That means you never have to wait to share what's on your mind. Talkspace therapists have experience treating depression, anxiety, substance abuse, trauma, relationship issues, food and eating, and much more. The bottom line is that we all need to talk sometimes, and Talkspace wants to give you more of the support that you deserve at a price you can afford. As a listener of this podcast, you can get $100 off your first month on Talkspace. To match with your perfect therapist, just go to Talkspace.com or download the app. Make sure to use the code SAVAGE, S-A-V-A-G-E, to get $100 off your first month, and it's a great way to show your support for the show. That's SAVAGE and Talkspace.com.
Hi, Dan. So I fell in love with a dude. I'm a gay man, and I basically fell in love for the first time, or at least I thought it was love. And right around the same time, I came down with a fairly serious genetic disease, and the person I fell in love with came down with cancer, which is fantastic timing for both of us. So he started chemo. I have a big surgery coming up. And right around the time, about the turn of the year, after having spent Thanksgiving with my family and I, and everything was going great, he had his January chemo treatment. He usually went into like a little chemo coma for like, you know, 2 weeks. And then when he came out of it, he'd, you know, call me and we'd talk and everything was fine. Well, January came and went and we didn't actually talk. Meanwhile, I'm texting him, you know, maybe not every day, but you know, often enough to just be like, hey, how you doing? Hope everything's going well. And then it became February and March and April and May. Meanwhile, I had gone to his house at least one time to drop off a present and talk to his brother. He's still getting chemo. He's posting to Instagram and still just won't even text me back. So obviously, like, that didn't work out. But am I totally crazy for wanting and needing closure of some type just for him to at least acknowledge that we were kind of, you know, dating and he met my parents and they ask about him and stuff, you know? So obviously, like, I need to move on. So if you could just tell me that, that would be great, first of all. But then second of all, am I crazy for wanting and needing, like, just a little bit of closure? And if so, how can I get it? Considering he apparently doesn't want to talk to me. Mind you, there was nothing that like caused a breakup as far as I know. Everything was fine. He just ghosted me.
Move on. What else can you possibly do? Nothing crazy about wanting or needing closure, but sometimes we want it and we need it from someone who is clearly never going to give it to us. And when that happens, we have to give it to ourselves. We can do closure ourselves. We can close the door. We can close the door on a relationship that ended for reasons that are a mystery to us, a mystery to everyone but the person who's not communicating with us for whatever reason. He's going through a lot right now. That doesn't give him a pass. He owed you at least a text or an email ending things formally. Even if he sent that text or email, though, he probably wouldn't have made you a list of all the reasons why he wanted to end the relationship. People rarely share those sorts of lists with people they're dumping because I think people understand that that would be hurtful and potentially damaging. And so we say things like, it's not you, it's me, I'm not in the right place right now, I have cancer right now. But you give a reason, sort of a little white lie, that lets the other person off the hook without ever fully explaining. Like, people want some sort of itemized list of all the reasons the relationship had to end so that they can then experience this thing called closure. Even if you're given that list, you won't feel that kind of closure. You won't feel emotionally satisfied about the end of that relationship. You will always grieve it. You'll always be a little bit sad about it. But the way people talk about closure, it's like a cure for that sadness somehow. If I just knew the reasons, if I just had this thing, I would feel better about the end of this relationship. And it's only time that makes you feel better. And the perspective time grants you that makes you feel better about the end of the relationship or the end of a relationship that you didn't end. Could he have ended it better? Yes. You could write him one more time and say, obviously, you know, it's been months and months and months since I've heard from you. I hope you're well. I've seen your Instagram posts. I assume you're doing well. Someday it would be nice to hear from you about why it didn't work out. And then send it, and what else can you possibly do? You sending that last email, that last text message, that's the closure you're looking for. It's not going to be satisfying closure, though. But you know what? Even if he gave you all the reasons he didn't want to talk to you anymore, didn't want to continue to date you, that wouldn't be satisfying closure either, in the sense that, oh, I'm content now and I don't feel pain now because I have this talismanic thing that I can label closure. It doesn't work that way. Really sorry this happened, and happened at a time in your life where you were struggling with health issues and he was obviously struggling with health issues and the whole fucking world's on fire. That has to make it worse and more painful. Maybe you'll hear from him one day. Maybe he'll give you the apology that I actually do think that you deserve one day. But you don't want to sit around waiting for it. Don't sit around waiting for it. Don't sit around waiting for him to give you something that you have the power to give yourself. And that's closure.
I don't mean to sound like your mother or anything, but have you made your website yet? You said you were going to get that done while you had the time. No, you don't need any technical help. That's no excuse. Not when you use Squarespace. They make it easy to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store without having massive web design or coding skills. It's intuitive, simple to use, and genuinely the most efficient way to get a website up quickly. There's nothing to install, patch, or upgrade ever. They have great-looking templates that you just drop in and it looks good right away. You can collaborate with other members of your group, all your little friends. Do an email blast. Connect with social media. Get set up with commerce. That means you make some money. Pretty much anything you need for a website. Squarespace is way ahead of you and they've thoughtfully included it. Lane built my band's website using Squarespace and it's worked out great. Thanks, Lane. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/savage and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hey, Dan, I just wanted to call and say thank you for making me aware that the HPV vaccine is available for men in my age range. I am 27, and when I was young, I was told that HPV vaccines were only for women. And I just got my last installment of the HPV vaccine, and I wouldn't have gotten it at all if you hadn't said so on the Savage Lovecast. So, thanks.
Joining me by phone to help tackle this, well, not quite question, statement, Aaron Berry, Washington Medical Director and Director of Clinical Research for Planned Parenthood of the Great Northwest and the Hawaiian Islands. Hey, Aaron, how are you?
Hi, Dan. I'm great. How are you doing?
Really, really good. So this really isn't a question. It's just a statement. Dude learned listening to my podcast that men can and should get the HPV vaccine. And I just wanted to toss it out there because I think that's important for men to know and the parents of boys to know that men should be vaccinated against HPV too. Can you give us the quick download on what HPV is, what the vaccine does, and why everyone, male and female, should have it?
Yeah, thank you so much. And thanks so much for bringing it up on your show, because you're right, it is just a crucial public health topic right now. So HPV, or human papillomavirus, is actually the most common sexually transmitted infection in the country. And it has a lot of different things that it can do. There's a lot of different types of HPV that are out there. But the good news is that there is a vaccine, and that vaccine can actually prevent 9 of the most common and the kind of worst types of HPV that are out there. That's why vaccination is actually so important.
And these getting infected with HPV can lead to cervical cancer, penile cancer, rectal cancer. So being immunized against it with a vaccine is huge, a huge benefit to your health.
It's huge. So it's estimated that 92% of all cancers caused by HPV in the U.S. could be prevented if people were vaccinated with HPV. So, I mean, that it's huge. That could essentially almost get rid of cervical, vulvar, vaginal, penile cancer, anal cancer, as well as head and neck cancer. So throat cancer is on the rise, and the majority of that is caused by HPV. That is preventable through this vaccine.
So what are the vaccination rates for HPV?
You know, they're not great. Right now, the latest figure I found is about 51% of teens are getting the recommended HPV vaccine, so just slightly over half. But that rate varies pretty substantially in different populations, different areas of the country, stuff like that.
And the recommendation is to get it, you know, for parents to make sure the children are vaccinated before they become sexually active. But if you're already sexually active, as this listener was, you can still get the HPV vaccine. It can still benefit you and protect your partners.
Exactly. About a year, year and a half ago or so, the FDA expanded the previous recommendation, which was set at 26 years. But now all people, all eight from ages 9 to 45, the vaccine is recommended for.
And everybody should get it.
Yeah. Yeah, and particularly it's important. Some people are like, oh, I'm 30. I'm in a stable relationship. I don't need it. And that may be the case, but sometimes people, you know, partners change, things change. And that's sometimes something that people don't remember or think about doing as part of, you know, their sexual life.
And as any listener to this show should be aware, sometimes, you know, I'm in a monogamous committed relationship. I don't have to worry about STDs anymore. Yeah, maybe it's not as monogamous as you have been led to believe that it is. That happens.
Exactly. Oh, yes.
So, Erin, we're gonna keep you around for a whole bunch of health questions that we've got lined up. I hope that's all right.
Yes, that's perfect.
What's the last thing you want to do right now? If you said go to the post office, you would not be alone. But what if you need postage to send out letters and packages? Don't worry. Stamps.com is here to help. With Stamps.com, you can print postage on demand at home and skip those lines and crowds at the post office. Plus, you can actually save money with discounts that you can't get at the post office. And this is something new and really valuable. Stamps.com also offers UPS services with discounts up to 62% and no UPS residential surcharges. Stamps.com for years has been bringing all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your computer in the safety and comfort of your own home, office, or anywhere else you're hunkering down right now. Whether you're a small business sending invoices, an online seller shipping out products, or you're just working from home and need to mail stuff, Stamps.com can handle it with ease. Simply use your computer to print official U.S. postage 24/7 for any letter, any package, any class of mail that you're sending anywhere in the world. Once your mail is ready, just leave it for your mail carrier, schedule a free package pickup, or drop it in a mailbox. No human contact required. It really is that simple and that safe. And like I said, with Stamps.com, you get great discounts too. 5 cents off every first-class stamp and up to 62% off shipping rates. Stamps.com makes so much sense, especially now, saving you time and money and keeping you safe and at home in these crazy times. And right now, on top of all that, my listeners get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Savage. That's Stamps.com, click the mic, enter Savage. Stay safe, my friends.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 31-year-old female from the Northeast. And for the last year, I have had molluscum, a skin condition that's harmless but sexually transmitted. And it's been all over my body. It's currently even on my face. This has stopped me sexually from engaging with folks because I don't want to pass it. It's highly contagious. And I've never heard of this condition before. And a lot of professionals that I've seen, well, some professionals that I've seen have said that I can have sex with it and that I don't necessarily have to tell my partners about it. Other professionals have said I can't have sex. I don't understand. And I've been kind of making the rules up as I go. What are the rules when a partner has molluscum? Should they be having sex? Should they be telling their partner? And I'm kind of bringing this up because I don't hear anyone talking about it. And all 4 gynecologists I saw said it's really common. So what gives?
So you just gave us the HPV 101, and now I'm going to ask you for the molluscum download.
Great. So molluscum, or molluscum contagiosum, is the sort of official name. It's a virus caused by a pox virus. It's very common in childhood, but also, you know, it happens in adulthood too, particularly associated with sexual contact or actually participation in group like contact sports. It's self-limited. Typically, it's treatable.
And what is it? How do you know you have molluscum? What are the symptoms?
Yeah, so it's typically people have these pretty small little papules or bumps on the skin, and they're just usually a few millimeters in diameter, and they're raised up, and they usually have a little tiny dent in the center. And it's called an umbilication because it kind of looks like a little belly button in the center of it. Mm-hmm. And you can have just one, or sometimes people can have like groups of them or croppings. They can be kind of anywhere on the skin, although they're never on the palms or the soles, but anywhere else other than that, they can be. If you have lesions near the penis, the vulva, vagina, or anus, then that typically is when we call it a sexually transmitted infection. But again, it is just pass from direct contact of the lesions themselves.
But it's not, it can be passed through sexual contact, like the common cold can, but it's not classified as a sexually transmitted infection, as the common cold also isn't. Isn't that correct?
Correct. Yeah. So it's just a virus that you can get from contact with other people, and it doesn't have to be sexual contact. It's really just from touching the lesion, particularly if a lesion is scratched or scraped.
And this is, a reason you don't want to sit bare ass naked on a bench in a gym or wear short shorts to go work out in a gym once we can go to gyms again, is because that's a kind of a moderately efficient way of transmitting this virus. But it doesn't cause cancer. There are no other health concerns beyond appearance.
Correct. Exactly. It's considered sort of not harmful to your health, but doesn't mean not harmful to your, sense of, psychological health and just sort of seeing these things. But the good thing is that they are, to talk with your medical provider, and they are treatable.
But treatment can be protracted. I assume that the caller has been talking to doctors for a while. She's seen 3 or more doctors who've given her conflicting advice about whether she needs to disclose or not. She's been seeking treatment. Is the infection in some difficult to treat and cure?
Yeah, again, in most people it's not, but in some people it is. And that can be associated with immune compromised states. So there is recommendations to, make sure and screen for things that can be immune compromised, like HIV. But also there is some potential correlation with certain types of atopic dermatitis. People who have kind of like allergy associated skin rashes or reactions, they can sometimes have, associated with worsening or just more risk of molluscum infections for whatever reason. I mean, we're not totally sure.
And how infectious is it? Like the question that she seems to be really bumping on with her doctors is whether this is a really common infection, is it easily transmitted, and what are her obligations then around disclosure?
So if the lesions are present, so if you have little bumps, then the virus is contained in that bump. So it's contained sort of just at the surface of the skin. So if the bump is there, then yes, it can be transmitted. As soon as the bump is gone, no, it cannot be. So it doesn't kind of live in your bloodstream like something like the herpes virus does. This molluscum is just sort of contained in the lesion itself. And so that's why when the lesions are on the genital area, the anus, vulva, vagina, penile things, the recommendation is to get those removed to limit the possibility or remove the possibility of sexual spread.
And what about disclosure?
So disclosure, you can pass it if you have the lesions. If you don't have lesions and they're gone and it's, then it really is up to you. Those are discussions that the chance of spreading, if you don't have any lesions present, is zero. The virus is gone. It's only in the lesions. But if you have the lesions that are there, they're still healing, you're not quite sure, then you really should disclose because they can be passed.
And using a condom or other latex barriers, if it's skin to skin, if it's not just on the tip of the penis or the interior of the vulva, isn't going to provide a great deal of protection if there are bumps present.
Exactly. And covering, so if you have bumps on your hand, something like that, the recommendation is to cover them with clothing or with a watertight bandage. And that's a pretty, very effective way of preventing transmission. the problem with lesions on, you know, on the genitals is that, you know, sometimes condoms slip or, you know, things happen where, mm-hmm. you know, you can move, that barrier gets removed and there's contact with the skin and you don't know it or don't realize it. And then, you know, just that limited amount of contact can transmit it in that scenario.
And why do you think that, you know, with all the paranoia about herpes and the constant talk about herpes, which, you know, in reality, in the lives of most people who are infected with herpes, it's not a big deal. Why is there so little talk about molluscum? Why do we hear about it almost not at all?
You know, it's a great question. I think there's a couple of reasons. So one, it's most commonly seen in childhood and children. And so it's sometimes seen as like a pediatric issue, which is obviously the case. You know, it is a pediatric issue, but it's also an adult issue, a human issue. But sometimes it's kind of put in that corner for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
And another reason is that it is treatable and it goes away. And although we have medications for herpes that can, you know, limit your risk of transmission and limit your risk of outbreaks and those sort of things, we don't have a cure for it. Molluscum, the lesion is gone, the virus is gone.
Erin Berry, Washington Medical Director and Director of Clinical Research for Planned Parenthood of the Great Northwest and the Hawaiian Islands. We covered so much ground today. HPV, IUDs, molluscum, bidets, menopause, abortion, the court. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome, and thank you for having me.
Dr. Berry stuck around and took a lot more questions. It's all on the Magnum, including a conversation with Dr. Berry from Planned Parenthood about the recent Supreme Court decision on abortion rights.
Hey, Dan. I'm a queer 30-something cis woman living on the East Coast, and I've got a question. So I identify as a femme and a bottom, and I'm attracted to butch lesbians who are tops. And one thing that I find super hot is when my partner uses a strap-on, we refer to it as their cock or their dick. And I love saying things like, come inside me or blow your load inside me, or I love the way your cock feels. I'll give them blowjobs. It's just overall fun to kind of play around like that. I know not all lesbians like this, but I've definitely experienced it with multiple partners. So my question is, do gay guys do this? Like, do cis guys with penises, do they ever say, fuck my tight pussy or anything like that? Is that a thing? Or maybe it's like, lick my tit. I don't know. Is this a thing for gay guys?
You might want to watch a little bit of gay porn, particularly gay porn that's been produced in the last, three or four years. A decade ago in Gayland, we were having this big freak out about mask for mask and everybody wearing baseball hats backwards and having gym bodies and being bros. And, you know, there's always a kind of erotic pushback to any sort of emerging, stultifying social norm. And you could have seen this coming, that in the wake of this mask for mask shit, it wasn't the sort of high-minded queer theory critiques of mask for mask bro culture that resulted in this, but in the wake of it, in reaction to it, you've got breed me, knock me up, fuck my pussy, gay guys calling their assholes cunts, the popularity of a little bit of sort of gender-bending cross-dressing, the sort of like the violation of this norm, this taboo, this expectation that everyone would be masked, that guys are into guys. People then saw that as it became the sort of dominant kind of gay male archetype and wanted to puncture his pussy. So yeah, there are a lot of gay guys out there right now who are talking about getting fucked in their pussies. Everybody out there in Gayland now, it seems, instead of saying, you know, fuck me and come in me, they say breed me. Now, for gay guys of my generation, when breeder was our hate term for straight people, it's really kind of weird to hear gay guys talking about breeding each other. Really weird the first time a gay guy asked me to breed him, by which he meant come inside him. Kind of freaked me out a little bit. And then he called his asshole a cunt, and I was like, huh. The more things change, the more they stay the same. In a way, that kind of mask for mask bro-y gay culture was a reaction to the expectation or just sort of the cultural assertion that gay men were feminine in nature and gay men sort of masked up to reject that. And then once that became dominant, gay guys started, you know, the perversity of the erotic imagination, wanting to violate that norm, that taboo. And so, yeah, you hear it a lot. You hear gay men talking about their pussies a lot these days. And I will leave it to the queer theorists to unpack whether it's misogynistic or whether it's affectionate, whether it breaks down gender stereotypes or reinforces them. That wasn't your question. Your question was, do gay men say these sorts of things? Do gay men talk about their assholes in sort of the mirror image photo negative way in which you talk about your girlfriend's cock? And indeed, they do. All right, before we get to your response calls, let's read your tweets. Juliet Winks tweets, it's amazing how many of my conversations include, well, Dan Savage says, my sympathy, Juliet, to your family and friends who must be sick of hearing that. With and without tweets, do you think it's socially responsible for OnlyFans models to actively engage in findom practices while some people may be nearly broke? Just curious as to the ethics of it. Well, with and without, I look at it this way. You can whip someone who likes to be whipped until their skin is red and flushed. You can whip someone until they're black and blue. You can whip someone literally to death. There are no ethical issues with whipping someone who likes to be whipped until their skin is flushed. Black and blue is okay too, so long as the person you're whipping likes it, of course, and also isn't going to lose their job or their kids as a result of heading home with bruises. If you know they'll lose their house or job or kids and you do it anyway, even if they asked, I don't think that's ethical. And whipping someone to death, even if they consented, not okay, not ethical, not something a person can consent to. Similarly, taking money that someone can spare and that someone enjoys giving you, no ethical issues. Taking money from someone, even if they'll give it to you, that you know they can't spare or don't have and that could possibly result in that person losing their home or starving, yeah, not okay, not ethical. But the FinSub has some responsibility here too. Financial domination is a kind of sex work, and if you can't afford to see the sex worker, don't see the sex worker. And Taylor Christensen tweets, Dan, do you or your listeners have a drinking game for the Savage Lovecast? I recently got a Magnum subscription. My wife has never listened. I would love to make a night of listening to the archives with her. Well, you could always do the catchphrases and neologisms, the DTMFAs, the GGGs, the Santorums, the peggings, but then alcohol poisoning is a real risk. Instead, I would suggest maybe taking a drink every time I pronounce vulnerable correctly. And yes, people, the L is silent. Invulnerable, just as the L is silent in salmon, calm, kernel, calf, half, walk, talk, chalk, could, should. This is a hill I am willing to die on. All right, if you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to include the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now your response calls.
Hi, Dan. I'm actually on my way to get COVID tested, but I wanted to stop and call a response in for the caller who was calling in about paying at dinner. I'm a waitress, and I always pay very much attention to when a man wants to pay and a woman is trying to split it. I think it can be occasionally an indication to the man that it's a de-escalation of the stakes post-date. So I always let females pay half if they want to. It just feels like sort of the responsible thing to let happen. If I was giving advice to this guy, I would say, tell your date that you have lots of money, you're happy to pay, but if she wants to split it, that's totally okay too.
I'm calling in response to the woman in the last show who had reluctant sex with her male friend. I think Dan was a little harsh on her because I'm willing to bet he knows she has feelings for him and he could have been more careful around that. But I want to thank you, Dan, for the reminder that reluctant sex is not sex you want to have, guy or girl, whoever. I've been in that situation a few times where I didn't really want to have sex at all, but I was afraid they'd feel bad if we didn't. I wasn't afraid they'd beat me up or anything like a woman in that situation might be, but it was still really shitty, uncomfortable sex. And I felt bad after, and she feels bad after. And what's extra shitty about those times is afterwards, she got upset with me anyway for making her feel shitty about the sex that I didn't want to have. So I guess the lesson is we all deserve sex with people who really want us. Don't settle for less or be creep about it, no matter your gender.
Hey, Dan, I just wanted to give a big thank you for bringing in the local Kansas congressman. Kind of in the name of us flyover states, I'm calling from Nebraska, it's just so Republican and often sometimes pretty backwards and slow. But I really appreciated the idea that there are tons of people here who are progressive and are very diverse and are really, most importantly, really working actively to change the kind of the persona of the red state views. And only by encouraging other people to come in and to take part in that work is that change really, really going to happen. And so I really appreciated presenting kind of a more welcoming view of the flyover states. And we would encourage you to maybe, you know, stop flying and drop on in sometime.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you want to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz, 206-302-2064. Better yet, better for us, better for the listeners, use the voice memo app on your phone to record your question and email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. This Friday, July 10th, is your last chance to catch Hump's Greatest Hits Volume 1 with some of our favorite dirty films from Hump from 2005 to 2018. Go to humpfilmfest.com to get your tickets. And by popular demand, on July 30th, Nancy and I will be hosting another Savage Love live stream. You'll be able to get all of your burning questions answered live from my living room. The first live stream was a lot of fun. We're really looking forward to the next one. Again, it's July 30th. Go to savagelovecast.com/events to get your tickets. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Planned Parenthood on Twitter at @PPFA. And if you can spare it, please consider joining me and Terry in making a regular monthly donation to Planned Parenthood. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week for an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.